I'm sure that you've heard it's the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper's being released. There's another 50th anniversary, and that's what the subject matter of Gaza Corner will be about. June 5th. This year, June 5th. It'll mark what Israel calls the liberation of Judea, Samaria, and the Golan Heights, what the rest of us describe as the birth of the occupation. This is the 50th year of Israel's military conquest of Gaza, the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Golan Heights. Since the 1967 Six Days War, Israel has systematically colonized Palestinian lands with Jews-only settlements, evicting hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from their homes, and has established an apartheid legal system with civil courts for Jewish settlers and separate military courts for the 4.5 million Palestinians who are subjected to indefinite detentions without trial. And the conviction rate is virtually 100%. While I was researching the 50th anniversary of this stain on the world community, I came across three what I consider outstanding opinion pieces. And for this Gaza Corner, I will excerpt from all three. One is from Nathan Thrall. He's a regular op-ed columnist for the New York Times. He also wrote a book called The Only Language They Understand, Forcing Compromise in Israel and Palestine. The two other columns are from Jonathan Cook, who has his own blog and also regularly has the blog appear on the United Arab Emirates newspaper, The National. And I'll excerpt from those two fairly briefly. I'll go into more detail from Gideon Levy, who is really my favorite Israeli columnist. He writes for Haaretz. And although Israel has no interest in a just peace process, they have ingeniously found a formula to make what I think everyone assumed would be a temporary occupation into a permanent one. And it could not happen without the full support of the U.S. government and your and my tax dollars, if you pay taxes. In Nathan Thrall's June 2nd op-ed piece in the New York Times, it's called The Past 50 Years of Israeli Occupation and the Next. He states, quote, Israel is now receiving more military assistance from the United States than the rest of the world does combined, his words. The United States has given more than $120 billion to the country since the occupation began in 1967. The United States is enabling and bankrolling the oppression of Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. He then makes this interesting point about the myth of cooperation. Quote, the myth upheld by leaders of the Palestinian government is that cooperating with Israel's occupation will somehow bring it to an end. The 12 years of close security cooperation with Israel under President Mahmoud Abbas, who I might add, was elected for a 4-year term, and he's now in his 13th year without any re-election. But Abbas in the West Bank has cooperated in terms of security with Israel, and as Thrall says, it's really clearly backfired for the Palestinians. I mean, there's no other way to look at it, as they are now more oppressed than ever. The occupation is more brutal than ever, and as it continues, most world leaders turn a blind eye. Thrall concludes, the United States and its allies pay lip service to the need to end the occupation, but do nothing to steer Israel from its preferred option of perpetuating it, enjoying the dowry, denying the bride, unquote. Moving to Jonathan Cook's piece, and all three of these, and one other one actually, are all linked both at the playlist and at the Tangents website. Jonathan Cook discusses the original formula Israel used to seize Palestinian land. Quote, one of the Zionist movement's favorite early slogans was, dunam after dunam, goat after goat, the seizure of small areas of territory measured in dunams, the demolition of the odd home, and the gradual destruction of herding animals would slowly drive the Palestinians off most of their land, liberating, in quotes, liberating it for Jewish colonization. If it was done piecemeal, the objections from overseas would remain muffled. It has proved a winning formula. 50 years on, the colonization of East Jerusalem and the West Bank is so entrenched that a two-state solution is nothing more than a pipe dream. And Jonathan Cook concludes by saying it is past time to recognize that Israel has established an apartheid regime and one that serves as a vehicle for incremental ethnic cleansing. If there are to be talks, ending that outrage must be their first task. The last column I want to reference is Gideon Levy. The title is What I've Seen in 30 Years of Reporting on the Israeli Occupation. Gideon Levy, I imagine there's no other journalist with more direct experience reporting on the occupation in the last three decades than Gideon Levy. And I want to read from his column because it's so powerful, so well written. If you have any interest in this topic, it's a must read. And I can only touch on it because it's detailed. And Haaretz is, I think, an excellent newspaper, and you do need to register. You can, you know, get some articles for free, but it's worth paying for if you need to. In the words of Gideon Levy, I began to write about the occupation almost by chance after many years during which, like all Israelis, I had been brainwashed, convinced of the justice of our cause, certain that we were David and they Goliath, knowing that Arabs don't love their children the way we do, if at all, and that they, in contrast to us, were born to kill. Again, this is straight from Gideon Levy's column in Haaretz, June 3rd. Gideon described his first reporting in the West Bank this way. He says, Dedi Zucker, then a Ratz MK, member of the Knesset, suggested that we go see a few olive trees that had been uprooted in the grove of an elderly Palestinian who was living in the West Bank. We came, we saw, we lost. That was the beginning, gradual and not planned, of exactly three decades of coverage of the crimes of the occupation. Most Israelis didn't want to hear about it and still don't want to hear about it. In the eyes of many citizens, the very act of covering this subject in the media is a transgression. Treating the Palestinians as victims and crimes perpetrated against them as crimes is considered treasonous. Even the depiction of Palestinians as human beings is viewed as a provocative act in Israel. The majority of Israelis don't want to know anything about the occupation. Few of them have any conception of what it is. They've never been there. We have no idea what's meant when we say occupation. We have no idea how we would behave if we were under its regime. Maybe if Israelis had more information, some of them would be shocked. There are those who protect the quiet, indifferent majority and allow them to feel good about themselves, untroubled by doubts or moral qualms, convinced that their army and country are the most moral in the world, believing that the whole world is only out to annihilate Israel. For not a day or a night goes by without crimes being committed just a short distance from Israeli homes, and we haven't yet said anything about the occupation as such, which is criminal by definition. Again, these are the words of Israeli journalist Gideon Levy. To cover up its crimes, the occupation has needed a propaganda-driven media that betrays its honest mission, an education system that has been recruited for its purposes, a duplicitous security establishment, politicians lacking a conscience, and a civil society that doesn't have a clue. A new occupation-adjusted system of values had to be developed in which the cult of security allows, justifies, and whitewashes everything. A sense of victimization functions as a cover-up, and a feeling of thou hast chosen us, the chosen people, doesn't hurt either. It was also necessary to come up with a language of news speak, the language of the occupier. According to this news speak, for example, arrest without trial is called administrative detention. And the military government is known as the civil administration. In the occupier's language, every child with a pair of scissors, every Palestinian child, is a terrorist. Every individual detained by the security forces is a murderer. And every desperate person who tries to provide for his family at any price is, quote, illegally present, unquote, in Israel. Hence the creation of a language and a way of life in which every Palestinian is a suspicious object. The first 50 years have seen rapid improvements in brainwashing, denial, repression, and self-deceit, thanks to the media, the education system, the politicians, the generals, and the immense army of propagandists abetted by apathy, ignorance, and shutting of eyes. Israel is a society in denial, deliberately severed from reality, probably an unparalleled case in the world of a purposeful refusal to see things as they are. In the past 20 years, the occupation has disappeared from the Israeli public agenda. Election campaigns come and go without any discussion of the most fateful issue for Israel's future. The Israeli public has lost interest. Today, an increasing number of Israelis deny the very existence of an occupation. Quote, there's no occupation, unquote, is the latest buzz. And Israel's refusal to end the occupation morphs in the hands of the propaganda machinery into a, quote, no partner, unquote, situation. It's a rare historical case. The occupier is the victim. Justice is on the side of the occupier only, and the ongoing war is being fought for his security and existence. Was there ever anything like it? I'm reading, excerpting from Gideon Levy's article, which appeared today in Haaretz. It's called What I've Seen in 30 Years of Reporting on the Israeli Occupation. I find it very powerful as we get near the end. Above all, this hovers, the lie of the temporary. Israel has succeeded in deceiving itself and the world into thinking that the occupation is a transient phenomenon. Just let the Palestinians behave nicely, and the occupation will disappear. Its end is seemingly waiting around the corner. For 50 years, it's been waiting there. There's no greater lie. Israel has never considered ending the occupation, not for a minute. The proof? It has never stopped building settlements. The occupation is here to stay. Israel has killed more than 10,000 Palestinians in these 50 years, jailed about 800,000. These incomprehensible numbers are also accepted as a matter of routine, self-evident, unavoidable, and of course, altogether just. Israel is one state stretching from the sea to the Jordan River without borders and with two different regimes for two peoples. The peace process provided the world with a cover for remaining silent and to underwrite the occupation. The 50 years of the occupation were one long atrocity. There's much, much more to this column from Gideon Levy, but I felt it was so well written from someone who knows as well as anyone, because he's been covering it for 3 decades. So I wanted to read from the column, and I urge you, if you're interested, to go to the link and read it for yourself. It's at tangents.com and also at the playlist. It's on the homepage and the playlist. The music for Gaza Corner will be from Reem Kalani. This is a piece about Yaffa, Y-A-F-A. That's the Arabic way of saying Jaffa. This is a city that was bombed with mortars before Israel became a nation, forcing the expulsion of much of the population. It was led by a terrorist by the name of Menachem Begin, who went on to become a prime minister. He was in the Irgun terrorist organization. Reem Kalani on 91.7, Gaza Corner.
قد جف دمعي فانتحبت دما متى أراك وهل في العمر من أمدي يا جف دمعي فانتحبت دما متى أراك وهل في العمر من أمد كيف الشقيقات كيف الشقيقات كأنها قطع من جناتي
That is the voice of Reem Kalani. The CD is called Sprinting Gazelle, Sprinting Gazelle, Palestinian Songs from the Motherland and the Diaspora. There's a beautiful booklet that comes with it, and she writes in terms of this song, written by Jaffa-born poet Mahmoud Salim Al-Hut. He represents the generation that lived through the Nakba, the catastrophe of the expulsion of the Palestinians from their homeland in 1948. Al-Hut wrote this after losing all his manuscripts when fleeing Jaffa. As the lyrics suggest, it left him with painful memories. The opening line, Jaffa, or as he says, Yaffa, which is the Arabic way, my tears have dried up. I weep for you with stricken eyes. Jaffa. Jaffa was seized before Israel's creation. It was originally under the UN partition plan to be part of Palestine. It was the largest city in Palestine, the largest Arab city in Palestine. It was the commercial center. And as I said earlier, Menachem Begin, as the leader of the Irgun, a terrorist group, began bombarding the civilian sections of the city on April 25th, prior to Israel's creation, and terrified the inhabitants to flee. They all thought they would return. Inconceivable that they wouldn't return, but they weren't allowed to return. Gaza Corner tonight about the 50th anniversary of the occupation.